food, baby.
We in here, yeah, we in here.
Y'all better get comfortable with saying black.
We in here, yeah, we in here.
Black versus the Board of Education.
Cause we in here, real of us now. We in here, yeah, we in here. Cause we in here, real of us now. And you know we in here, yeah, we in here. Cause we in here.
That's why we are indeed a whole mood.
That's it.
Well, hello, 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 and welcome to another Monday of Black versus the Board of Education. My name is Miss Laureen, and I welcome you into this space. It is March 10th, and it's time for training day. Black students deserve educators who see them, hear them, and respect their lived experience, their lived experiences, not teachers who reduce Black history to offensive, misguided lessons that do more harm than good. After yet another classroom debacle involving a Black History Month assignment centered on inbox, it's clear that some educators still don't know how to effectively engage Black students. In this episode, we're calling it what it is: a failure in training, a failure in understanding, and a failure in care. But we're not just going to critique. We're actually here to provide some practical, real-world strategies to build better relationships with Black students, foster trust, and create classroom spaces where they feel valued, not just targeted. So what should cultural competency actually look like in practice? How do educators move beyond surface-level awareness and truly connect with their Black students? That's exactly what we're going to talk about. So welcome to Training Day. And as of course, before we get any conversation started, we have to let you know who's in the building. So I'm going to start with this young lady right here to my left and go ahead and kick us off.
Hi, it's Jazz, back on another podcast on another Monday, talking about another issue.
Well, you know, there's an abundance of issues all the time. Mm-hmm. And while we give this gentleman time to catch his breath, we'll go to this gentleman who was here with us last week. So go ahead and introduce yourself, sir.
Hey, everyone. It's me, Bryce, again from BBSN.
Okay. Well, put your mouth close to the microphone because we want to make sure they can hear you. Sir.
Yeah, it's me. It's Fox. You know, you're having a little medical issues going on with the tonsils.
That's how you gonna start it off.
Hey, I let the people know. Yeah, that's man. Real. Even though the tonsils is messing up, there's no excuse of why you don't show up for your folks. So I'm here.
Well, we welcome you into this space. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And also leaving us, actually concluding our introductions, is this young lady right here. Go ahead and introduce yourself, ma'am.
My name is Melissa, and I'm a freshman at UC Berkeley.
Well, I'm so glad you guys are here because after last week's episode, we've gotten a lot of attention. Shout out to Mr. Ernest Krim the III, who is a content creator and a former teacher out of Chicago. He actually added us as a collaborator on one of his posts. Mm-hmm. And to date, I believe it's like 70,000 folks have seen what is going on here in Elk Grove, California. And there's a lot of talk about what should happen with that teacher. And as I thought about it, and everybody's trying to figure out the teacher's name and all that good stuff. And I know, and I don't know if it's good or bad if they find out who the teacher is. But I was thinking, you know, it's easy to critique folks, but what if we actually offered them some help? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, we don't get asked a lot what we think or how they can do better at what it is that they're doing. But we're just going to insert ourselves into the conversation as usual. Sorry. And we're going to make sure that they understand that, one, there is a benefit in adding folks from the targeted group that you're actually looking at. They can provide you some insight. And so we're just going to, again, add ourselves into the conversation. So I'm going to just kick it off with Melissa. I'm going to go to you first. What does it truly mean for an educator to be culturally competent when working with Black students?
Well, first of all, and this is one of the reasons why I want to be a teacher, I think you have to have the heart to learn about students and about the specific group of students that you're going to be teaching. And if that is a predominantly Black group of students, you have to want to be able to learn about them. You cannot teach someone who has a bias already to be kind to people. If they have already made up in their mind and have grown up not liking Black people, even if it is covert and they don't even recognize that it's a bias within them, you cannot teach that. So I think that it takes a very specific type of person to even be able to be a culturally competent teacher.
Bryce, would you agree? What does cultural competence mean? And you know, how can it help when working with Black students?
I would agree. And when it comes to what you're asking, I would say, let's say a student got in trouble, or there were some Black kids that got in trouble, and there's some white kids that got in trouble.
Mm-hmm. For the same thing, right?
Yeah, for the same thing. Uh-huh. And for the Black kids, it would kind of be more as if they're belittling them, and they're putting it like they can't understand what they got in trouble for, or they can't understand what they're doing that got them in trouble. While if it was with the white kids, normally they would get let off, or they would not get as much of a punishment as the Black kids would in the school systems. And I feel like if you don't want to be seen as a person who doesn't treat everyone equally, you should give the equal treatment for if there's a situation going on, instead of belittling someone because they're a different color or they have different colors of their skin.
Okay. Jess?
I actually had to look up what cultural competence actually meant, because you have many ideas of what a phrase means. But I looked up, and I'm a visual learner, so I looked up, and up came this picture, and it's just a cycle of attitudes, knowledge, skills, and awareness. And that's the cycle to developing cultural competence. So I just feel as though teachers just, one, they have to care, because if you don't care, you won't be aware. And you got to change your attitude. You can't just, okay, yeah, I know, and then just have the same attitude, because that's not change. And if you're uninformed or you don't know, get informed. And I feel like the knowledge is, that was definitely needed. And when you have more knowledge, you can gain more skills to deal with the different types of behavior that you may be experiencing in your classroom, instead of telling the Black kid, go stand outside and miss the lesson. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Figure something else out.
It's only one part that I don't agree with. I disagree that somebody that that comes from racism or comes from such bigotry cannot gain cultural competence. For that person to meet, only thing that it takes is for them to be aware of what their bias is and aware of what they come from. Case in point, 2 weeks ago, maybe three, I'm off on the time. I was at Sac State and we was teaching, and a white girl said, I come from racism from my grandparents and my parents. They're both racist, heavily racist. I come from rednecks. So that was her admitting, this is where I come from. These are my biases. But she also said, I don't got nothing wrong with you guys. I like your food. Right. So it was by her opening up, it also showed a level of, we can teach you something, because she clearly didn't have a problem with us, but her upbringing allowed her to see things and look at things in a way that's hateful towards me and harmful to ours. So people like that, they do be in the work field, but those are the ones that come to these cultural competences and they learn something. And not just white folks can learn something for cultural competency. Black folks can too. You know what I mean? You come in these classes, and excuse me, I got the hiccups. You come in these classes, and this is where Black people learn, when they say stuff like, hey, everybody up in here, take your hat off. Cultural competency teaches you that guy right there is a Muslim, and that's not a hat.
It's actually
a part of his religious garment. That's what teaches you about the people praying over there in the corner. That's what teaches you about other people's fasting, not to be opening up big food bowls in front of them, and hey, they fasting right now. It's a level of something that goes on. That's what teaches you about when you have a student in the room and he's telling you, I can't snitch, and then you look and you say, well, dang, his daddy's a gang member, his brother's a gang member, he lives in the hood. This ain't something of him trying to be bad. It's a code that was embedded in him. And sometimes it takes your cultural competency to understand where he came from, to understand what we can really talk about and where the growth is actually is. And like you said, why this kid might not even understand why he got in trouble.
Right.
You know, but.
And so I just want to make sure we're operating under the same definition. So cultural competence is the ability to understand, respect, and interact with people from different cultures. So when I hear that question, what does it truly mean for an educator to be culturally competent? That means that you have the skills to interact with different kids the same exact way. That means I'm not isolating you based on whatever I think is weird behavior, and I'm not hyper focused on you, that I have the ability to look at everybody and understand that, one, and I agree with Ms. Tawana, that they need to be aware of their biases first. And sometimes this is the beginning of the problem, right? So if I'm culturally competent, my biases don't outweigh my ability to see people as human beings worthy of care, compassion, and concern, period. That's what it is. And so a lot of times, even when you're looking at these discipline numbers, you see that there is grace given to kids who are from the same background as said teacher or non-Black, and there is a more of a desire to get compliance from Black children. And I'm not understanding why so punitive all the time. It's a punitive response all the time. And it's not my opinion. This is what statistics are saying. Matter of fact, we were just profiled in the Commission on Hate, their report on the news. And it says that Black boys are three times as likely to be suspended as their white counterparts. But it says in the line right under it, it says that Black girls are six times more likely to be suspended. And so we used to just look at this as a isolated thing where this was just happening to Black boys. But now we see an uptick in the same things happening at a greater scale now with Black girls. So I'm a reports person. I have to look at it because it has to inform our work moving forward. So unpacking bias, how can teachers recognize and address their own biases before showing up in their lessons or interact in discipline or in interactions with Black students? Bryce.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, I was going to say that question one more time. Yeah.
How can teachers recognize and address their own biases before showing up in their lessons, discipline, or interactions with Black students?
I'd say before to recognize it, you'd have to, before just saying something, you'd have to stop and think about, hey, is this going to be doing good for me in the future? Mm-hmm. After saying this, am I going to get a lot of feedback or negative feedback? Mm-hmm. Or how am I going to make the child that I'm talking to feel?
Okay.
Like the child may not interact with you in the wrong way after that, but that doesn't mean that inside they don't feel something wrong with the way you may have reacted with them due to how you feel with the culture they come from.
Okay.
Let's say that there was a whole class where we were talking about a history lesson. Mm-hmm. I think something we brought up on the other podcast, and we were on a history lesson talking about how slavery went. Mm-hmm. And we pointed at the only two Black kids in the room.
Right.
How would that make them feel rather than everyone else seeing that they're pointed at, giving the people something, oh, well, haha, this is what you look like back then. Mm-hmm. And then it opens a cycle for bullying. Mm-hmm. And then it makes the child feel worse about themselves.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to say is I feel people nowadays need to think about what they're saying before it immediately is brought out, because it can affect more than just your job, but it also can affect the mental state of someone else, causing them to go down the wrong path further down in life.
Okay. Melissa, jump in there.
Yeah, I think if we're specifically talking about educators, you have to have, because in education, there's a teacher, you know, there's curriculum, but there's also like the curriculum and things are run by other people. So in order for a teacher to be able to hold themselves, they have to be held accountable by someone else. It can't just be you recognizing your own bias, because in order to even know that you have bias, there's a moment of awakening to realize that you do have a bias. So there has to be another additional person to hold you accountable and bring that to the forefront, because you don't know it's different than how the world works, because that's how you've grown up. Like wherever your bias was implemented is how you've walked through life for however long. So in order for that bias to actually be acknowledged, you have to be held accountable. So I think if we're specifically just talking about educators, some administrative position has to hold them accountable. But in order for that to happen, everyone else around them has to also be on the same page that all students need to be treated equitably.
Fox.
I was going to say exactly what Melissa was saying.
Okay.
To a T, just in different words.
Okay.
But it boils down to exactly what she said in the form of somebody else has to tell this person, because some of these educators, they studied education and they wholeheartedly believe they're right and this is the way they've been raised, and they do not see their biasness. Mm-hmm. And some of the reasons why is because their counterparts, their husband, their girlfriend, their friend, their sister, and their mama, they all think the same way. They participate in a circle that's support such behavior. But me as an administrator, as your employer, I'm supposed to be able to look at this report that you writ and said, hey, not only did you misspell this word wrong, but how come Miley didn't get suspended at all? But little Jamila, she's up for expulsion.
You keep talking about Jamila. Like, Jamila makes a
justice for Jamila.
No, it's a safe way to go. Charity. But, we can go. But anyhow, my point is, one, the employer needs to be able to say that in the person that he gives it to. Once I'm pointing this bias out to you, mm-hmm. now I have to monitor that I pointed this out to you, because you're going to have another child that deals with another situation. But when these situations come up, there doesn't need to be us looking in the news and saying, man, it's the eighth time this happened. Third time you out, man. Why you keep doing this?
Right.
That's why did this keep happening? Mm-hmm. But I agree wholeheartedly with you, Melissa, because they always say this to us. It's the burden of the community. The community has to let this be known. Well, in the teaching community, that's a community and a culture within its own.
Yeah.
Change your culture to be in a culture of accountability. Mm. Of when something happens, they call it whistleblowing. Why is it called that? It's telling the truth. Something happened, and now you're saying, if I say something, I'm blowing a whistle, it gets you. So really what you're saying is, allow you to harm as many kids as you possibly can, or not. I can't blow the whistle on that because you my coworker. Mm. You're not but you're not my community brother or sister. If this is what you're doing, it's arbitrary to us helping these kids.
Right.
That whether that kid be Black, Mexican, Asian, white, whatever. But according to today's records that we're reading, these kids just so happen to be Black. Mm.
Jeff?
I don't know. Everybody done said everything there is.
I'll find something to say.
Let me see. I'm normally good at
How
that.
Can teachers recognize and address their own biases? Or can they? Because I'm hearing they can't. Somebody has to point it out to them.
I feel as though you just put yourself, kind of what Bryce was saying earlier, is put yourself in the child's shoes. If you was having this read to you, and just if the race you're teaching about isn't your race, just simply say, instead of Black, say white. And if you feel uncomfortable with the sentence that came after that or whatever, then you know that Black people are going to feel the same. It's literally the same.
I kind of like that.
And we all have the same emotions. I don't ever buy into that angry Black woman stereotype. That's why I was.
But I am angry.
Oh, yeah. I'm angry, but I'm not. You know.
And I'm okay to be angry. Now ask me why I'm angry.
That part.
Right.
But I feel
why are you angry?
I feel like the stereotype.
Because people be playing. People like to play dumb.
Real.
People like to act like they don't see what's going on. And the bottom line is they wouldn't trade places with Black people.
Exactly.
So you
That's
know
the part.
Something is going on.
Mm. Exactly.
So I want people to stop pulling and pissing on my leg and telling me it's raining. Right? Because at the end of the day, I had to do work on myself. You think it's easy for a Black child to go into a classroom and then be the only Black child, and they're the only ones that have the burden of getting through a toxic environment with people who don't believe they should be there in the first place? And I'm specifically talking about honors classes.
Real.
Right?
Yep.
When I walked into the honors class, they were looking at me like I didn't belong there. They didn't ask me how I got there in the first place. They didn't make me feel wanted a part of that class environment. I wanted to escape, but I belonged there because I was smart enough to be there. But if we don't have enough people understanding that, one, sometimes certain environments are reserved for only certain kids, right? Sometimes those teachers, because they haven't seen enough of you come into that classroom, believe that none of you are smart enough to be here, and they respond to you in kind, because they're like, well, you're wasting my time. You're not able to learn. You know, you shouldn't be here. And so when we're talking about how they address their biases, the same way we're supposed to address ours. We just had more practice because we've always been forced into different environments with other people, and we've had to learn how to get along with people.
Can I say something to that?
Absolutely.
Because when you say this and we talk about educators, I don't think of Ruby Walker all the time when it comes
to Ruby Bridges.
Bridges.
She did walk though.
She did walk, but I call her. Her name is Ruby Bridges. My nickname for her is Ruby Walker.
Okay.
Because in my brain, yeah, you walked. However, I look at this situation and I look at what you're asking for today about cultural competence. Mm-hmm. I looked at what I seen happen behind the scenes of Ruby Walker.
Ruby Bridges. Uh-huh.
Ruby Bridges. We're going to name her right on here. That's my personal nickname. That's on Fox. But her name is Ruby Bridges. That's what that little girl name was. Mm-hmm. But I also look at what it took for her to walk on the school grounds. When you talk about cultural competence.
Can we stop sanitizing?
The white folks in that crowd, grown-ups.
Grown women
was and showing
men.
Hang signs.
Coffins.
Uh-huh. Was telling her that she don't belong. They was telling their kids to tell her that she don't belong. These were
they
people
took their kids out of the classroom.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And this is the point I was bringing to. When Ruby Bridges was actually in that school, they didn't send her to that school. They sent her to a private classroom. They never integrated.
No.
She had her own teacher in her own classroom. They never actually integrated.
But she only had her own teacher because the other parents pulled their kids because they didn't want them going to school
Correct.
With a black girl.
Now, moving forward, when you're talking about cultural competence, these are the same schools we're sending our kids into right now with the same people still alive. They still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
The same ones that was holding that signs is now her teacher looking at her like, it's okay.
Well, they may not be because she's in her 60s now, but they may 60s. Still be alive.
They grandkids.
But
this is the lineage of where you come from.
Yeah.
This is the person that was in your household. You as a privileged child was given to the right to have that feeling.
And she was a sacrifice. Let's be very, very clear. She was a sacrifice from the NAACP who needed a kid to go in there and integrate schools.
And you didn't integrate.
No. And she had to be walked in by the what are they called? The
National
Guard. Right. But then when I say cultural competence, why aren't we telling the real story?
They spit on that child.
Why aren't we telling the real story? Why have we put it on the school books? Have a Ruby Bridges walk to school day.
So when I think of cultural competence,
that's ridiculous.
Do you realize that
they be having the black kids run in the front of the line, leading the march. Like, what the hell are we doing?
They didn't get to school and get welcomed in the Ruby Bridges.
Them babies.
Yeah, Richard Bridges.
The truth.
But in cultural competence,
and she wouldn't even
understand,
eat because they were talking about poisoning her food. Like, come on, man. Like,
this
again,
is what I want you to acknowledge. When you acknowledge that,
but then we'd have to go into the history books. Most of that stuff.
Cultural competence for me as a man, right?
Yeah.
I'm black man.
And Melissa, jump in whenever you're ready. Yeah. I see you about to jump in. It's like double dutch. Melissa's trying to get up in here.
Come on in.
No, I was going to say exactly what you just brought up, that she's still alive. But cultural competence is also talking about she's still alive too. She's only 70 years old this year. Like, that's the age of my grandmother, my mom's mom. Like, she's. Cultural competence is also talking about how not so far removed this history is and how they're trying to make it seem.
Not
like this just happened.
Really?
Right. And they do it in black and white pictures. And I know that we've talked about this before. They do it in black and white pictures, or they republish pictures from that time.
To make it seem like it's older than what it is.
Right. And it's not that old. But we out here leading marches around school talking about Ruby Bridges walked to school day.
Nope.
And I remember asking Elk Grove at the school board meeting, are y'all going to be providing National Guard too? And everybody looked at me like I was the crazy one. But I read, you know what I mean? And I think it's offensive. It's offensive to sanitize this to the point, just like the legacy of Martin Luther King, to sanitize it to the point where it's put out that this was an enjoyable experience walking to school. It was not.
It was not.
And that's part of cultural competency, knowing that we know the truth and stop playing with our children in this fashion, right? But I'm going to move on from that point because I want to make sure we still go down this list of questions. What are some effective ways educators can earn the trust of Black students and their families? I'm going to go to the student first. Melissa, then I'm going to come to you next. What are some effective ways educators can earn the trust of Black students and their families?
I'd say instead of going to the student that they want to have the trust relationship with, go to the parents first.
But why are they not on the school campus with your parents?
Let's say it's a parent and student meeting.
Parent teacher meeting.
Let's say it's that. First, have a conversation with the parent, and then have a conversation with the parent and the student, so the student doesn't feel that the teacher's going straight to the parent, like most students do nowadays.
In terms of what?
Let's say they
like they got in trouble.
Yeah, let's say they got in trouble.
Well, who are they supposed to talk to? You? No, I'm like, curious.
Let me put it this way. I feel that some teachers may, let's say a student does get in trouble, the teacher may make it seem like when it's a black kid that something happened it was a bigger situation.
Okay.
When they just go to the parents. But when the student's there and the student tries to speak up, the teacher will, like, let's say, make a face or try to say, oh, that's not what happened. It happened way
dismissive.
Worse. Yeah, they may act dismissive about it.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm saying is when a situation or something comes up and has with a Black student, instead of the teacher having the student talk also with the parent, it may be like, oh, I sent an email. And then the student goes home to the parents and they're like, it's way different than what happened in the classroom.
So I think that what you're explaining is that you want the student to have the opportunity to explain to the parent first.
Yes.
Before. Okay. So that's based on how you said it. It's like, okay, something happened and I'm going to go directly to the parent. My understanding is that's what they do.
Yes. What I'm trying to put it as is some teachers can cause bigger situations.
Mm-hmm.
If the student also doesn't get to put their part in before it goes to the teacher, is what I'm saying.
Okay. So I think, Melissa, that goes back to what we said, I don't know, five years ago, parents believe your student.
Yeah.
Because there used to be a time when we would send our kids to school, the teachers would say something happened and parents would automatically believe the teacher's account of what happened. And so what you're saying is you want to be able to tell your parent first what happened before the teacher gets to them. And that's not the system you're in, baby.
Not at all.
That's not the system you're in. You're going to have an understanding with your parents first, because I think that this is, again, there is not called school to prison pipeline for no reason.
Nope.
Right. I think that this is a punitive system that requires compliance. And anytime, and I know Black children are right fighters. Y'all want to over-explain yourselves. You guys want to write statements and you want to do all this stuff. I don't advocate for our kids writing statements. You come get an adult and you let them advocate for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because this system closely models after the criminal justice system, there has to be things that we do differently. Mm-hmm. There just has to be. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Somebody else want to jump in, Fox? Do you agree, disagree?
Say your question again, because I was listening.
I didn't have a question.
One of the things that I heard that you were saying, as far as parents believing their kids, like you said, y'all said that 5 years ago. Even today, when we was going through, we went to a couple of meetings today, and I've been noticing a trend of when we go to these IEP meetings and there's cameras around, and we ask for the video footage, and we get told things like, "Oh, the camera doesn't. It's not for the school. It's for the parking lot." What?
Yeah.
But you just cited the cameras, which you looked at.
Uh huh.
Oh no, but we lost that part of it.
They're pointed towards the street.
Yeah. Or they'll show the footage. And today, as I was looking at some footage, I seen a child engaging in something she should not have been engaging in. Yeah, she engaged in the fight. But with some of the accusations that was made about the fight, the other person did it. I seen it clear as day on the tape from different angles. Whooped all over that staff. but that allows for I believe what you were saying. Believe your child. Come to the school ready to advocate for your child. Don't just believe what a teacher said. If this teacher has had what we asking for today, some level of cultural competency. Can't no teacher tell me something about my nephew? They can't tell me nothing about you, Bryce. This is one of my brightest BBSN boys, and I got a lot of them. But you can't just tell me, hey, your BBSN boy Bryce came to my door the other day. He played doorbell ditch, kicked my door, and ran off. I'm not going to believe you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see the footage. And if he tells me he didn't do that, I'm going to believe him. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Does that make him perfect? Does that mean he doesn't struggle? Does that mean that he doesn't have triggers and I haven't caught him doing other things? No, I don't believe none of that. What I'm saying is, he said he didn't do what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And even though my kid got problems, let me see what you're talking about. Who are you anyway?
Mm-hmm.
You just a school teacher,
right?
And I don't want to put it that way, like school teachers are unimportant, but as a group, you guys are making your words look bad in front of us, because I keep coming to these meetings and busting y'all in lies.
Mm-hmm.
We keep going to the school board meeting and asking them to do things that you've been going up there advocating all this time, and I keep hearing you reiterate the same words and asking for, when is this going to happen? And you leave your phone number and you leave your email, but guess who calls you? Your mama. Your workers.
Some people aren't ready to change, right?
Right.
But what does that have to do with our ability to advocate and keep requesting the things? I'm putting it on record.
So you're not willing to change,
that you didn't know.
How are we going to get you this cultural competency? And who's responsible for making sure that you take cultural competency seriously if you're working in this field and working under this board. You come across coworkers, which are other teachers. They see you in the field.
I think it's going to have to be tied to money
and everybody else.
It's going to have to be tied to that LCAP. It's going to. Like, you can no longer, in my mind, if you failed at a specific thing for so long, you should no longer be rewarded with funding until you change your approach and get somebody in there to help you. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we've been rewarding bad behavior for so long that I don't know if we can course correct. We've put the same type of people in leadership positions, and they feel very paternalistic, right? They want to be somebody's parent. And I'm not seeing a whole lot of desire to collaborate.
Listen, I have to interrupt you when you say that, because it is so absolutely true.
It
and
is.
What is disrespectful about it to me is the fact that you, at a gross rate, you have expelled all these Black kids, suspended them. You've got on them about the punishment side. And that's not to say that some of them was not wrong. What we're saying is you grossly punished them. Yep. You didn't just give them the suspension.
Disproportionately.
You expelled them up off of school grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come to find out what happened. You say, well, you know, he called me a nigga when we was talking. What?
Yeah.
Some of these papers literally say that. He's disrespectful, and then you can't say that. That doesn't call for the expulsion off school grounds.
Or, but now, they put a litany of different education codes on a discipline form, and then you ask for specificity, what exactly are they, you know, accused of doing? And they're like, they went into the cafeteria. Okay, and?
I told him not to.
That's why you're expelling him? Like,
he didn't follow my orders.
This is not.
That's what it really says.
It's not that.
Now, this is the extra disrespectful part for me as walking in as an advocate, as I'm watching all these cases show up with all these kids, this happening to these kids, and you said the key word. You're not trying to work with us about it. You show me what you think about us when all this is happening, and the parents of these kids, the community of who these kids are happening with. We come in the room and tell you what's going on and what's going on at home, and they be trying their hardest to be transparent, and they tell them, hey, his daddy ain't home. He's having issues at home, and, you know, we kind of poor, we hungry, but, you know, I'm trying my best to get him at school. But at mass numbers, you ain't listening to us. So that tells me you're not listening to my child. That's why I believe him when he tells me, because you don't even listen to me when I talk to you. I'm the parent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the advocate. Mm-hmm. I'm the Black lawyer. I'm the person that's coming in here that, you know what I mean? These people, that's what our people hold. We hold very intelligent titles when we come in the room. So much to so that I've seen other Black educators come in the room and say, I work for this district. That's how you're going to treat my child. And they're serious about it. And they said, well, you shouldn't have walked in that cafeteria. And then they turned around to find a way to fire them.
Yeah.
So if you're not listening to my kids, and then we equally come in turn, and like you said, to give you this cultural competency, you got to hear it from me.
Mm-hmm.
We are the only ones that can tell you what our thing is. But you're taking these people from other cultures, from other countries out here. You walk on them with this red carpet and you say, hey, he doesn't eat pork. And then you give him the salad diet. But I'm telling you, we start at home, or his daddy ain't home. He got an anger problem. I'm having an issue with him. He recently started smoking weed. I'm liaisoning with the school to get some type of counseling, something here. I'm bringing it here every day. I don't have the gas money to do it, but by hell and high water, God has blessed me to be able to get here to do it. Can you please help me? And you kids keep telling me, yeah, we're going to expel him. He needs that time at home. And I'm telling you, ain't nothing for him to do at home.
Mm-hmm.
Can y'all send home some paper with his stuff? You're going to say that you can send home every paper you can if you say he's late in his homework. But you won't send home nothing for us to do this. You won't talk with them, and you won't ask the kid. And some of these kids, they telling you themselves. Some of the stuff that you asking them to not do, you say, this kid is violent. He grew up watching his mother and his daddy fight. He walk outside the door, he said, and guess what their parents tell him? The same thing mine told me, told you, and told you, and told you. If somebody hits you, what you supposed to do?
Hit him back.
That's what we was told by our parents. So now I come in this principal office, and you ask me, you didn't have to do that. Why'd you hit him like that?
Right.
Well, my mama said, don't let nobody put their hands on my face.
Real.
But that's part of culture, right?
Yeah.
And they have to know that about your background in order to deal with you effectively.
Yeah.
They would have to know your cultural upbringing, how you were taught. That they can only do that by forming a relationship. There is no correction without connection.
Saying it again, please.
Period,
I heard you say it so
point
many times.
Blank.
Connection.
There is no correction without connection. So that leads me to my next question. When harm has already been done, like in the case with the N-Bucks, right? How should educators and school leaders respond in a way that is genuine and actually repairs?
Fire the teacher. Especially, there's no way that this is the first offense. Fire the teacher. Because there has to be time after time after person after person. I mean, I went to high school in this school district, and there was so many complaints from all the Black kids at this one English teacher, how he was just overgrading and over this and get out and go take a walk and this and that. And it was so many complaints that even the school little officers, whatever, you know, they call them campus officers, campus monitors, they knew. They was like, oh, you got that teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I telling you I got this teacher? Now I'm going to my counselor to change out of his class before I even know. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, there's no way that this was the first offense. And if it was, that's a very, very, very far offense. That's very far. So you either need to be under investigation up for losing your job or something and not on paid leave. Just stop paying these teachers to not be to be away when they did something for them to have to be away. Mm.
Melissa, how do they?
I agree exactly with what Jazz said. The teachers need to be fired, because if they know that they have a job to come back to, and there's no consequences, they're not going to stop.
Not at all.
And then I feel like it needs to go farther than, like, you have to hold the teachers accountable, but then other people in administration knew about this. So it's like, who's going to also hold those people accountable too? Because if you fire one teacher and bring in another teacher who thinks the same way and is going to do virtually the same things to the same students, mm-hmm. then we need to go farther through this hiring process. Who are y'all bringing into the schools? Because this is a problem. This is a problem. It needs to go way higher than just the teachers. But then it's like, who is going to hold those people accountable too if everybody in the system doesn't care about the students? And y'all only look at students as paychecks. And really? If you show up and you're here and I can count you for attendance and you're not tardy, then I get paid. They don't care about you as a student. So then it's like, who's going to hold those people accountable as well?
Mm-hmm. Bryce, how do they repair harm, or does harm just continue to go?
I mean, once the harm's done, you can't really going out and saying, oh, I'm sorry, it was all a mistake. That's not really going to do anything. It's not going to repair what the Black students may have been tainted on their name. It's not going to mm-hmm. repair any of that. Mm-hmm. And if they do fire them, they got to, because for the lady that did this, or man that did this,
allegedly,
for the person who they went through some process to get that person without doing a full background check mm-hmm. and asking questions that would give them answers, showing them that they would do right in the classroom with certain cultures. Mm-hmm. And due to that,
I mean, that's what I want to know. Do you even ask? I mean, or do you just put them through a litany of classes and say, okay, certified teacher, great.
Right.
Because you went and got this credential, right? Or you went and took the CBEST and you passed it. What other things are they looking for in these teachers before they hire them and they put them in the classroom, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm just trying to understand, how do you fix something that you're not willing to acknowledge actually happened in the first place without giving me excuse to why you did it in the first place?
True.
How do you fix it?
I feel like they should, because when I got hired on, I got asked, what would you do in this situation? Right. They need to start doing that for a whole plethora of...
Well, they would have to care.
Yeah, exactly. And so you would tell by their answers if they cared or not.
They better be glad Earl ain't over in this school district, because they be having a whole bunch of uniform complaints. Ain't that right, Earl? Mm. Shout out to Earl in the chat. But go ahead.
Let me say this, though.
Yeah.
In order to fix it, you guys like to mirror your system so closely to the justice system, to CDCR and jail systems across America. More of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You mirror your system after them, and you like to have these off-duty officers from other El Grove PD and other police come on your campus. So
they're not off-duty; they on duty.
They're on duty, mm-hmm. but you like to bring them onto your campus where they shouldn't be on duty. No police, no officer need to be on duty around preschoolers, first graders, junior high kid, unless this kid kills somebody selling drugs. You coming on campus for kids who swing at each other once or twice, throw a backpack and throw some water. Now they got to go to jail. But anyway, since you mirror your system so far, well, we as the public would like you to do exactly what they do too. Put that body cam on. Mm-hmm. Let me hear that crap you're talking about. Because I'm going to tell you what was discovered.
Like it.
I'm going to tell you what was discovered by making officers put on them body cams.
What was discovered?
And no shade to the police system. This ain't nothing that I'm trying to say because I'm just trying to facts. Go to what I'm just speaking
accountability.
Facts. What was discovered was they were slamming people on their head. They were pulling out them guns. They knew there wasn't accidental shootings. Some of them was telling people before they shot, shut up, I'll bust. Thing up and you're like, what?
You sound like a
gangbanger. Yeah. You sound like a gangbanger. They was taking dope. Laying I just seen recently.
You
I just
saw
seen,
that deputy?
I just seen recently one of them OD'd up inside
the station.
On some dope that he took up off somebody else. He took that up off him like, oh, you got the good
he
stuff.
Asked him what
then
it was.
Then he asked him what it was. No what is this? And then he asked him what trap house no you got him on. Where'd you get this mic stuff?
Right.
Yeah, this mic stuff right here is good.
Don't be busting out sack sheriffs like that. But
that's what happened.
Not you naming the PD.
What also happened,
it's
though.
In the news. It ain't me.
This what else happened, though, because of them situations.
Hell.
By them having them body cameras on, they was getting upset because it started picking up their conversation, too. Yo. When they riding down in the car, they're like, they ain't had nothing but bitter talk upon them things. Put them things on them teachers and see what they be saying before right. they go talk. Well,
I actually
like that idea.
Put it in the class.
Because, you know,
I bet
when
pick
our
up,
kids...
I gotta go holler at this little nigga right here, man.
When our kids get in trouble or we want to come and observe in the classroom, we got to give notice.
And they know.
So when we give notice,
right
we're
on that
telling
walkie-talkie,
them...
That same walkie-talkie that they don't want BYOP to be having.
That we're coming and that now they can course correct their behavior for the day. Exactly. They're not going to act out in front of parents, right?
Students be looking.
So I actually like the body cam on teachers. They would never do it, but I think their union would have something to say about it, but you know, we could slap cameras on them too.
Because you don't want to put cultural competence in play. I keep watching the rules that you guys are pinning in play.
Yeah.
And the rules that you guys keep hitting and pinning in play.
Well, who's you guys?
The union.
Oh, okay.
The union or these school teachers keep putting in rules that allow them to protect each other's BS and not out their BS.
So hold them accountable.
They won't. They put rules in place so that they don't even have to hold each other accountable. They literally say this, when we come to these meetings and you start asking too many questions and you hit them too hard across the head, we're going to postpone this meeting. We got to call our union rep.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the union rep come in there and while they talking and you say, hey, how come this kid wasn't allowed to play in the sports thing and he dunking on people? Oh, and we got tapes of him dunking on people. Don't answer that. You don't have
no, actually, what?
Yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with why we're here. It absolutely does. It's the contents of why this kid got so mad before he turned around and said,
yep.
You won't say, you say that part. I won't let him play on the team. Yep. Why? Well, how many black people on the team? Well, we have one person that said they're
mixed.
They're mixed. And, you know,
they're 25%
don't
black.
Answer the rest of those questions. We can't tell you that. Why you can't? It's public information.
Right.
So you're saying that in order for them to gain trust, there should be a level of disclosure and accountability.
Disclosure. Because anywhere else where children are at, the only thing that's off the table where children is at is confidentiality about who's the child's abuser, what's the child's actual name.
Mm-hmm.
And but other than that, it's noted everything that happens with a child.
Yeah.
Anywhere else. And if you do anything to a child on any other grounds in any other institution mm-hmm. besides jail
mm-hmm.
and school, there's a full release. You can't take a child to the dentist without them having to say, look, this is what happened. This was the camera. They came in at this time. Mm-hmm. The parents are, but it's not. But not at school and not in jail. They mimic the same rules and the same.
It's everybody be quiet.
Of hiding stuff.
And circle the wagons, right? So that nobody's held accountable. Everybody is protected. And the victim is re-victimized and traumatized over and over and over.
And mind you, while we're on that same subject, I would like to reiterate only with the statistics.
Yeah.
The children that are getting this by the gross amount of numbers are the black kids.
And so we would need to know why that continues to happen.
Why won't you work with us as a black community to figure this out? If we're the ones that can tell you the most cultural competency about the way we like to be respected and loved when we come into this thing.
Well, because, I mean, you know, and I don't think that they can use black staff within their organizations, because if you say anything that goes against the grain, you put a target on your back.
Man, I heard white ladies say this at the last school board meeting. And when I say the last one, I mean, I can't remember the date exactly. Maybe
it was
you
Tuesday.
On Tuesday, Tuesday, more than one white person stood up and said, I see the racism going on. These black people been telling you that you can go. It's got to be on record. I see the racism that's going on. These black people been coming in here telling you that this place is racist. Why won't you believe them? Why won't you look off into it? Why won't you pass a bill or something about this? Is what white people were saying in this school board meeting on Wednesday. They got up and said, and I was shocked. I'm like, wow. She's saying, I've been coming in here hearing them say this about this issues that's going on. I've been seeing this going on. I'm telling you, I've witnessed several incidents. Mm-hmm. You don't even want to listen to your own when they tell you. What'd she say? Mm-hmm. She's moving.
And I think, you know, just to put a pin in that, what I noticed at the school board meeting, there was the extended time given to the topic that was right in front of the public comment. When it got time to talk about this in book, they minused a whole minute from folks giving public comment. Usually it's 3 minutes. They told us to get it done in two. And their first speaker was one of their employees, and she was talking. Her time ran out, and they called security on her. They had her escorted from the podium, and she was still talking as she was walking away from the podium. And I saw a second security person about to enter into the chambers. And when we're talking about equity, in the way in which we're doing something and we're talking about gaining trust, sometimes you have to bend the rules to make sure everybody feels included in the conversation. When people are traumatized by an act or an indiscretion, we have to be sensitive to that, and we have to allow them time to speak. And it's not for anybody to be rude, to cut them off. But I thought that calling security was just a bit much, right?
That was gross. That woman was traumatized. She didn't need security. This is what she needed.
A hug.
Right.
Go on, get it out.
Right. And so, you know, this next question, how can schools bring in more Black voices, mentors, and community leaders to ensure students feel represented and supported?
Just do it like Nike. Just do it.
Just do it.
No shortage of Black people that want to work.
Melissa.
First of all, not calling security on people who are just trying to talk. Because like when I was in high school, I was a student representative on my school district school board. And public comment went right over all the time. And when we needed to talk, they let people talk. And so I think that's insane. But I think to have leader or Black leaders in spaces, we need to feel like we're wanted there and that you're not going to completely shut us down, that we're going to be treated as actual members of the community and not just a Black person who you have invited into this community. Like, we need to actually be a part of that community. It needs to be a place that we feel safe, that we can actually contribute to effectively, and that we're not gonna be just discarded to the side, or we're here as the token Black person, because you need one Black person, you need diversity, so you're choosing me. And that was always when I was asked to do leadership positions, always had to make sure, like, am I here because my voice is actually wanted, because I have something valuable to add, or do you just need a Black person and I know how to speak to the problem that you're asking about, and you need me to come to some conference? Like, am I here as a token Black person, or am I here because you actually value my voice, my perspective, and my opinion?
I love it. Bryce.
I'd say, you know how some schools, every other year, they will put out a survey to give it to all the students.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like instead of doing a survey, they should pull out students and have a one-on-one interview with them, see what they've experienced with their teachers, see how they feel at that school. And I like let them talk and see how, like, let them speak about how they feel mm-hmm. at the school. They feel safe, how they feel.
So we're talking about the kids.
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like the students know more because they're there all day. And okay. The teachers will only say what needs to be put out and not what's actually going on in the classroom that may be serious, because of course they might want to silence that and not get their jobs at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So
how can they bring in more Black voices, mentors, and community leaders?
I feel like with the students speaking out, it lets higher power people mm-hmm. see what's going on so that they can bring in those voices.
Okay.
So if other students in other school districts did this,
mm-hmm.
it would make it easier, and it would see what the issue in schools is so that administrators then feel the need to bring people in.
So you don't think they know what the issues are?
Some school districts do, and others may just be like in denial about it because they don't really see it as a high issue, but they've never spoke to the students about it.
Jeff?
This kind of brings me back to what he was saying, kind of brings me back to that advocacy that we did together at that one school with that little girl and how nobody thought to have campus security escort her to class, even though she is being bullied by grown boys who are way bigger and older than her. So I feel as though like maybe
what's a grown boy, just in case somebody has a question.
So like an eighth grader and then like a 115 pound.
That's a grown boy.
I feel like that's them is big boys.
Girl, 115 pounds is a big boy.
I'm saying versus 115 pound little girl.
Okay.
So
I thought you was gonna say seniors versus a freshman.
I mean that too.
Or you talking about some eighth grader girl?
I mean that's real, but that was just a situation where we were that. But I was just giving that as context. Like, yeah, seniors versus freshmen. Like,
and you don't mean grown, you mean big.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like more grown than who they're picking on.
Big. Not grown.
Big.
Because we don't want to give the impression that you're trying to adultify.
Yeah, no, not at all.
No, no. So you're saying the boys are bigger than this little girl.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, like, just things like that. Like, and don't have it be somebody who the child sees and has gone to and wasn't listening to them. Have it be somebody who is completely unbiased in a safer space than a teacher who's already talked to you and didn't do anything, who's already lost the student's trust. You know, like maybe what Bryce was saying, but just maybe as somebody who can actually do that without the bias, because they don't know the kids. They don't know the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And what they hear from the kids, they have to believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You want to weigh in? How can schools bring in more Black voices, mentors, and community leaders to ensure students feel represented and supported?
I'm going to say the same thing I started off with. Just do it. Because you see us on these websites. You see it in these podcasts. And you see when we're trying to partner with you. I've been in the meetings. I'm not one of the ones who I'm not somebody who speaks to certain contracts. Mm-hmm. However, I'm in the room when these contracts are happening. And what I see is, you have all the money in the world for all these other programs. And what did this program look like? I'm not even going to say, because I'm not going to dish nobody else's program like that. Mm-hmm. But it's not effective.
Yeah.
But when we come in the room and we say, hey, you know, it's going to cost us gas money to get up here and whatever, whatnot, and we're willing to accept the pennies when you're giving somebody else quarters and whole dollars and 75 cents. But we willing to accept the pennies just to be able to reach our babies.
Yeah.
Work with us.
Right.
Because guess what happens? We've yet to show up on campus and be shown as somebody who was ineffective.
Right.
We've yet to be complained about as somebody who does not do their job.
Mm-hmm.
You may not like the way I'm doing my job, but you can't say we're not effective with these babies.
Mm-hmm.
And how could we not be effective with these babies? These my babies.
Right.
These my people's babies.
Right.
These my people's babies.
Right.
This your sister. This your little brother. This your niece.
Mm-hmm.
And amongst our system, culturally, we also have another system.
Mm-hmm.
We taught to look out for our own. We taught to look out for them. We taught to share, even in our most stingiest moments.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't got nothing but this bag of burritos. Man, I'm hungry. Give me something, man. Shh. Open your hand.
Right.
You be stingy sometimes. You only get that much. But you done gave a boy two, three of them Doritos. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when it comes to what can you do to allow us to come to these school campuses, that's a real question that the other side of the table really needs to answer, because we've done our part. We come to you. We let it be known. We open to it.
Right.
What's the work hours? Geez, that's going to cut off into my own kids' graduation, but I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'll be there. And guess what else we do? What else makes organizations like ours so impactful?
Mm-hmm.
You can go through my text message. You can show my phone on the screen right now. I don't know how you get it up there. But what you're going to see is text messages at 8 o'clock at night. 9 o'clock at night, you're going to see phone calls that parents is allowed to call our organization at 11 o'clock at night. And it ain't about nothing suicidal.
Right.
It's about their kid acting up at home for something that happened earlier in the day in your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And us talking them through it and saying, well, I understand how you feel. And why don't we try this?
Right.
You're going to hear us asking them what their trigger is. You're going to hear us making them accountable for their actions, but also asking them, how do we figure out what the trigger is for you so that this action doesn't happen again? You don't hear how deep we actually go in about ours.
Yeah.
But what you don't give us credit for is how deep we go in with yours, too.
Mm-hmm.
We don't just go in with ours. We go in with yours, too. Mm-hmm. Don't get misconstrued by the name Black Youth Leadership Project. That's just who I am. And I'm proud to be a black man, like you're proud to be a black woman, yeah. just like you're proud to be a proud black young lady, just like you're proud to be a black young boy, right? Coming into your manhood, because you're going to be 18 coming soon. I'm proud to be black and I want to help my black community. However, what you can't accuse us of is not coming through talking to your community as well.
Yeah.
But when it's time for you to come help ours, again, what's up with these expulsions? What's yeah. up with these kids? What's up with the grossness of what they're being exposed for?
Yeah.
That's not working with us. Okay. That's not working with the parents. And I digress.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we talk about community representation and people bringing our program specifically to their schools or within their school districts, I'm not here to validate my existence. Straight up. I'm not here for that. I'm here to help because there's a certain expertise and a certain type of experience that I've had growing up Black in this society. I do not get in the middle of what the men do with BBSN. Why? Because I've never been a Black man. I don't know what it is to be a Black man. I don't know the different struggles they have. Yes, we're all Black, but there's a specific type of experience that Black boys have that only a Black man can understand. So when you're talking about bringing in different voices into a conversation, we have to prioritize that those voices from that particular demographic and from that particular community. And when you do that, it's not then agency for you to come in and get upset because it wasn't done your way. And we have to be very, very clear. There are so many things that go on school campuses. I've been visiting school campuses for the last 7-8 years. There are so many different things going on simultaneously that you're asking me to do basically magic after harm has been done, after they've maybe come into contact with people who don't look like you, don't look like them, but for some reason you remind them of that. And I'm talking about educators in the system. They may have encountered a different educator that came across their screen or whatever, or not screen, I'm looking at a screen, that came across their life and their educational experience that harmed them, and you remind them of them. So there's a way that they respond to you as children do, right? I can only go based off of what I've experienced, right? And so I just think that when we're talking about, you know, bringing in community organizations or mentors, we have to understand that sometimes we have blind spots and we can't always expect folks to do what we do because that makes us feel comfortable. We have to give them the agency to be able to do it in their own unique way and to figure out how we can partner for the betterment of the child. So we're running out of time. I got two more folks left in here because everybody, we have support networks coming up. I want to give y'all 30 seconds, but before I do that, we have our legislative open house coming up on March 21st at the state capitol. I hope Bryce has signed up. We'll be taking over the capitol and making sure that our young people know how bills become laws, how they enact those in their neighborhoods, in their communities, and you know what it is that they're responsible for. They will learn the legislative process and they will stay ready and learn the game to lead the change. So if you have young people probably 7th graders to 12th graders. Mm-hmm. If you have young people in those age ranges, please make sure to sign them up on our website today. We have limited space. They're going quickly and we want to see you in the building. So make sure you join us March 21st for our legislative open house, the first one since COVID. Woo-woo. So we're super excited about that. And so 30 seconds, what would you want teachers to know? What steps can be taken to ensure teachers receive ongoing meaningful training on race, bias, and Black student engagement? Go.
I feel as though kind of repeating what I said earlier. If you read the sentence and it's a different race than what you are, switch it with yours. And if you feel uncomfortable, then change it. And be culturally sensitive and be culturally competent. Learn what those words mean, learn how to enact them, and learn to make your space safer for all your children.
Okay. Bryce, what steps should be taken at the district level to ensure teachers receive ongoing meaningful training on race, bias, and Black student engagement?
I have to agree with what you said. Mm-hmm. If you are going to do a lesson, or you're going to talk to a Black student, or you trying to help them. Don't change the way you talk to someone just because they are a different race.
Okay.
Because then it makes you seem like you have to be a whole different person to talk to a different race.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. Mm-hmm. You can be yourself when talking to another person.
So what can the school district do?
When it comes to school district, mm-hmm. they would have to train their teachers in a way to where a teacher shouldn't feel scared or uncomfortable mm-hmm. talking to a Black student normally.
Okay. So meaningful, ongoing meaningful training. First of all, get rid of the train the trainer model. Some people given training classes look like the people that are offending, and they don't understand the seriousness of the material or how detrimental that could be to a child when they're. Get rid of the train the trainer model. Get you somebody in there that is not a yes person, that will tell you the truth and will tell you how to effectively deal with their children. When you're talking about meaningful, it has to be somebody, one, again, who will tell the truth. The way that education and the education system was initially enacted, that was not with us in mind. And we have to acknowledge that before we can change that. When you're talking about meaningful is subjective, right? What my meaningful might not be your meaningful, but how can we ensure that the training is effective? We make people get off their phones and actually listen. And maybe we require them to demonstrate understanding and not just leave just to check off a box that they did 5 hours of professional development.
Right.
Demonstrate understanding, just like you do with the children.
Yep.
The same standards that you have for kids after taking a test in your class, apply them to yourself.
Yep.
And I think that's how we enact that meaningful change. You can always call me. I'm happy to be honest with you. I think that too many times Black folks that are hired in the district are those who they deem safe. Get you some, I don't know, rebels,
mm-hmm.
and don't be afraid of them.
Nope.
There's a reason why we're here. There's a reason why I am called to do this. There's a reason why I left my job at the Capitol, because I have the capacity to tell you the truth and I'm a stand on my square. So with that, we're going to hit y'all with the peace sign. We out of here until next week. Join us next week right here on Black versus the Board of Education. Peace.